You are Locked On Giants, your daily New York Giants podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, New York Giants fans, and happy Twitter Tuesday to all of you as we open another episode of Locked On Giants. I'm Ed Valentine, along with Patricia Traina and Patty. Lots and lots of questions today from New York Giants fans to get to. Hopefully we have some good answers.
Hopefully. I mean, some of the questions were very, very, the type of questions that make you go, that's a good one. So I'm really excited about getting to your questions today.
Well, Patty, let's do this. Many of our listeners, many Giants fans have sent us questions regarding right tackle Eric Flowers. Let's do this. Let's take them all in bulk here. And as we start our show, we'll do our first section on Flowers in general. We have questions ranging from, are there candidates to replace him, to what can be done to help him, to should Chad Wheeler play, to how much rope does Flowers get? Let's just take Flowers in bulk and talk about where that's at. So Patty, first of all, I think let's just address the idea that there's something better than Eric Flowers out there on the free agent market right now.
Okay, I think first off, guys, a couple things here. Number one, when it comes to signing vested free agents, you have to remember that if you sign them before the week one game, their salary now counts, it's guaranteed for the duration of the year. So that's why you will often see a lot of teams do some veteran tweaks as opposed to these waiver wire claims of guys who are invested. So you'll see teams make, sign a veteran here and there after week one, because now the salary isn't guaranteed throughout the entire year. And that's important, because if you want to cut a guy because he's not working out or he ends up on IR and you want to do a split, that helps your cap. All right. So there's a reason why NFL teams wait until the second week of the season to bring in vested veterans. All right. So with that said, is there anybody out there that might be better than Flowers? Couple thoughts on that. You know, number one, the Giants have invested all spring and all summer in Flowers. And if there's one thing I personally have learned about Pat Shurmur, is that he doesn't panic after just one game. All right. I don't think he's going to just throw up his hands after one game and say, you know what, this isn't working, I got to go in a different direction. With that said, I'm sure he's not blind to what was the past, because, it's on film. I'm sure he's not oblivious to what he saw on Sunday. But I also think, given how Shurmur approaches his job, which is to teach, which is to correct, which is to kind of guide guys, and show them, hey, this is how it should be done, and this is what we don't want. I just don't think they're going to pull the plug on Flowers this quickly. I would be very surprised if there is a different right tackle in there when the Giants take the field for the Cowboys.
Patty, one thing that I wanted to say is, look, I saw some comments in my Twitter timeline yesterday after Pat Shurmur's press conference. Shurmur stood in front of the media and he did what he really needed to do yesterday in terms of Flowers. He defended Eric Flowers the best that he could. I mean, and people were in my Twitter timeline going, is he blind? Oh, here's another head coach making excuses for Eric Flowers and what's it going to take? And this and that, to get rid of Flowers. And I mean, you're fooling yourself if you think that any head coach, whether it was Ben McAdoo or whether it's Pat Shurmur or whatever, is going to stand up in front of the media and shred a player, in public in front of the media like that. That's just not going to happen. I mean, his job Pat Shurmur's job at this point is to help Eric Flowers get better. It's to help him build some confidence. It's to help him try to be the best player that he can. The reality of it is, you know, Chad Wheeler is not better than Eric Flowers. There might be guys on the street whose names that you know, but none of them are necessarily going to be better than Eric Flowers. The reality of it is Eric Flowers, the way the Giants are constructed, is the best option they have. Pat Shurmur's, you know, his job right now is to build his confidence. It's not to stand up there and destroy him. You know, as you said, Patty, I'm sure he sees the film. He knows it wasn't good. He knows there's plays that need to be fixed. And his job is to try to fix them the best they can and then to scheme around whatever they can't.
Right. And then there's also the other element is that we look at the plays and, you know, we see things that happen and we say, oh, my God, Flowers is just a train wreck. But there's often more than what meets the eye. There's explanations there. You know, it could be a case where, you know, maybe Flowers was trying to clean up or something. You know, for example, Patrick Omame missed. We don't know the calls. We don't know the assignments. Now, you know, before anybody says, oh, you're defending Flowers, he's terrible. For the record, I did not like that pick when it was made. I still don't like that pick. Okay. I personally think that Flowers, this is his last year here. And the proof is in the pudding. They did not pick up the option year of his rookie deal. So if that doesn't tell you where they're headed for this with this position, I don't know what will. With that said, right now, I'm not sure they're in a position to go and plunk down millions of dollars on a quality right tackle. I don't think there is a quality right tackle out there. If there were, you know, you look at teams around the league who need offensive tackles, and you know, there just wouldn't be enough to go around at this point in time. I think that'll be a priority next offseason, and I think they're going to try and do the best they can with Flowers. At least for, you know, the coming week. I don't know what's going to happen beyond, because as we record this, I don't know who's coming in for a workout or, you know, what the plan is or anything like that. But I just don't think they're going to give up on Flowers this quickly.
Patty, at this point, they really can't. You know, they went down this road. I mean, there was talk in the off season that they might try to trade him, you know, and apparently they couldn't really find a market for him. It's a salary cap league, and we talk about this all the time. They have Eric Flowers under contract. They're paying him. He has this season left on his contract. They've done what they can. You know, they moved him off the left tackle position, which I've said before I thought should have been done at least a year earlier. You know, they've spent all, as you said, all spring and summer working with him. They have little choice right now for the 2018 season but to work with Eric Flowers. That said, you know, we sat in the press box and we talked about it, you know, Sunday. They have to give him help. They have to put a tight end on that side whenever possible. They have to chip, you know, to give him some help. You can't put him out on an island. It still is a new position for him on the right side, you know, and he's learning it. It's not natural for him. He's going to need some help, and the Giants are going to have to find ways to give it to him.
Right. And just to add to the point about the salary cap that you mentioned, his salary is guaranteed for this year, if I'm not mistaken, which means they're just not going to put him out on the street. I mean, he'd have to do something really, really bad to get cut. I mean, you know, play aside, that, you know, that's what the coaches are there for. They're there to try and fix what they can. I'm not saying they're going to, you know, necessarily be able to turn him into an all-pro overnight, but they're there to help him and fix some of the things that are popping up. Now, unfortunately, I think with Flowers, a lot of the bad habits that we saw pop up are just ingrained in him. But, you know, it is what it is. I mean, at this point, we know what he is. We know what we're going to get from him. And, you know, you can only hope that, you know, the offensive line coaches can somehow get through to him and just say, you know, get him to trust his technique a little bit better than maybe, you know, what he has in the past.
Before we move off the Flowers topic and get to the rest of our questions, Patty, there was one thing that Eric Flowers said yesterday when he talked to reporters. And as I wrote at Big Blue View this morning, I was glad to see him, you know, come out and speak with the media on Monday. I thought he really should have taken a minute or two to do that Sunday night instead of leaving the other four Giants offensive linemen, you know, to speak for him and about him, you know. But I thought he did a good thing yesterday by speaking to the media. But the one thing that I found really curious in what he said, he was asked specifically about the first play of the game, the tripping penalty, and I don't have the exact quote in front of me, but he seemed to give the impression that he didn't know what type of player Calais Campbell was, that he didn't know whether Campbell was a speed rusher or a power rusher. You know, he sort of left the impression that he hadn't really studied Calais Campbell and the Arizona, or not the Arizona, and the Jacksonville, you know, defensive linemen the way that he should have or could have. And to be honest, I mean, that answer bothered me when you think of the amount of information and the amount of film that these guys have at their fingertips.
Yeah, I mean, I've spoken, as you have, to many players over the years, and they say that the mental aspect of the game, the preparation, is about 75% of what you need to do to be ready on Sunday. Now, you're right. I'm looking for the quote itself just to see, but I remember that. I remember exactly what you're talking about. I don't just remember the exact words, but I think it was a little bit ambiguous, that quote. I would like to think that Flowers studies. I don't know, you know, obviously we don't know how much each of these guys studies, except for maybe Eli Manning, who lives at that facility. But you're right. If it came down to Flowers not really knowing his opponent, that's a problem. And that's something that coaching will not be able to fix. That has to come from the player. So, I don't know. I just would be curious to see, you know, or to hear a follow-up on that response. I don't think anybody asked a follow-up to that, you know, when he said that. But, you know, it's certainly worth asking next time he speaks.
It certainly raised an alarm for me, Patty. You know, we don't know his study habits. I know that, you know, over the years I've talked to players who thought they were studying, who thought they were working hard, who thought they were watching enough film, who said to me, you know, it took me 2 or 3 years to realize that I wasn't studying the game the way it needed to be studied.
Yeah, and I found the quote, actually, that you were talking about, and I'll just read it out for the listeners here. The question was, the tripping penalty, was that just to make sure he doesn't get to Eli Manning and any? And then that question cut off, and Flowers said, yeah, it was a quick pass, so I jumped out there too fast on it. Next time I know what type of player I'm against. He's not really a speed guy, so next time I won't jump out so fast. That was the quote that Flowers, you know, said in response to the question. And you know, I won't, when he said, I know what type of player I'm against, you know, that's a preparation thing. But again, it's kind of an ambiguous, I don't know. I just think there could be a little bit more context, because as that quote reads and sounds, it doesn't sound very good at all. So, I mean, I don't know if Flowers was basically saying, well, I thought I knew what I was getting and I got surprised or whatever. But if he didn't study, shame on him. That's all I have to say about that.
I'll second that, Patty. With that said, let's take a quick break. We'll hear from one of our two sponsors, and then we'll come back and we will get to some of the other listener questions that we have. Right now, let's hear from The Athletic. Hey there, New York sports fans. Are you tired of the clickbait? Tired of seeing the same headlines reported every day? Are you sick of having your reading pleasure interrupted by those annoying pop-up ads? Then you really need to check out The Athletic, New York City. The Athletic has assembled a team of all-star writers covering all of your favorite teams. The Knicks, Giants, Devils, Rangers, Nets, Yankees, Mets, Jets, and others. Want to see what's going on with teams in other cities? You can do that too. A subscription to The Athletic New York gives you full access to the site's entire network of cities. Want to take part in a live Q&A with a writer who covers your favorite sports team? You can do that too. It's all there, ready and waiting for you with just a single sign-on. Why not give The Athletic a try today? They're offering a free 7-day trial with no obligation. If you like their coverage, save 40% off a full year subscription when you sign up for an annual plan. That's right. An annual subscription comes to just a measly $2.99 per month when you take advantage of The Athletic's special introductory offer. Visit www.theathletic.com/lockedongiants to start your free trial. All right, Giants fans, Ed Valentine and Patricia Traina back here on Locked On Giants. We're going through a Twitter Tuesday, so let's get to some of your other questions regarding the Giants and where we go from here after their Week 1 loss to Jacksonville. Our first question comes from Dan Zandali, and I apologize if I'm mispronouncing the last name, but Dan wants to know, did the offensive line look worse than they really are because it was Jacksonville, or are the same problems here to plague Eli Manning and the Giants, for the end of his career?
Ooh, I think, number one, you got to give Jacksonville its props. Okay, that is a very, very, very good defensive front. I mean, let's not mince words about it. Let's give them credit. They are a very good defensive front, and they were a very good test for that Giants offensive line. Now, one of the issues I know I asked about leading up to last week's game, and I spoke to just about every offensive lineman. I said, guys, you haven't played together a full game, okay, in the preseason for one reason or another. How concerned are you that the chemistry and the gelling process isn't quite where it needs to be? And I've got the standard, canned answer. Oh, we work together in practice. We're in the meeting rooms, blah, blah, blah. Guys, that's not the same as being out there in the heat of battle where you have to make a split decision, where you have to be confident that you know what the guy next to you is thinking. All right. There's a big difference. So with that said, I kind of got the impression that, they're not quite there yet, and they probably won't be there for another week or two. The more practice reps they get, the better they're going to be. But the important thing are those game reps. You've got to go through those battles and say, oh, okay, this team ran this type of twist against us, so now we know how we're going to handle this if another team decides to do it. So it's just there's no substitute for actual game experience, as we're finding out, as we found out all along. And I think the Giants offensive line is certainly, can certainly be in that boat.
Patty, I will certainly agree with you, to an extent there. Obviously, we hope that with reps and with games, that this offensive line will get better, working together as a unit. The one thing I will say is this was a very, very difficult test to start the season. But I think, as we may have anticipated, there were specific, weaknesses or specific things with the offensive line that we talked about months ago as potential weaknesses. And Jacksonville, as good as they are, exposed all of those. We know that they exposed Ereck Flowers. When you look at the film, you can see that they exposed Patrick Omame, especially in pass protection, which is something that we worried about. We look at Nate Solder and we know Nate Solder is a good player, not a great player. He's an important leader. He's an important piece of the Giants, you know, but Solder made a couple of mistakes. Will Hernandez is a rookie who's going to be a very, very good player, but he was still playing his first NFL game and it wasn't perfect. So all of the things that we expected to see as potential weaknesses or had pointed out as potential weaknesses on that offensive line, you know, are things that the Jaguars were able to expose as realities.
Yeah, I mean, look, anybody who thought that that offensive line was going to be a polished product, you know, a well-oiled machine at this point in the season, just doesn't happen. You know, it like we said, you know, five new starters across the line at every position, four new faces. You have two guys who are playing on the opposite side from where they've been accustomed to playing. You've got a rookie in there. There's going to be some growing pains. So, you know, it's going to come together, you know, within the next few weeks, I would think. You know, I just think Giant fans need to be patient. And I think the coaching staff will probably adjust accordingly to make sure that, you know, they're giving the offensive line, you know, the confidence and putting them in the position that they need to succeed and just making sure that they're still able to function and do what they want to do on offense.
Fans and patience, Patty? You're asking for fans to be patient? Nah, you should know better. You should know better.
I know.
Anyway, Patty, let's move on to another question. And this one is a quarterback question. And BJ wants to know simply, would the Giants in the future trade up for a quarterback when it's time to make that move? You know, similar to what the Eagles did a couple of years ago, probably what the Jets did, you know, to get Sam Darnold.
You just can't. There's no way to tell. I mean, you don't know where they're gonna be drafting. You don't know what year Eli Manning's gonna disappear. You just don't know. That's, you know, no offense, but that question is so far down the line. It's just not. It's a good question. But it's just not something I don't think you or I can really give a well thought out answer. You know, you've got to look at, okay, what other needs does the team have? You know, I think, you know, by the time Eli calls it a career, will probably be after the 2020 season, and then we're potentially facing a lockout. So, I mean, really, a lot can happen. It's just, you know, could it happen? Yes. You know, I'm not going to say no, it's not going to happen, but to say, you know, will it happen? You just can't call that right now.
No, you can't. The only thing that I will say is Pat Shurmur did indicate the other day, because he was asked about long-term plan at quarterback. He said, we have one. It's just not the one that everybody thought it was going to be. And they're not going to share that with us. When the time comes, they'll do what they have to do.
Exactly. You know, I get the impression that, number one, not only is Eli Manning going to play out his contract, but I could see a scenario where they extend him. If he plays, you know, decently and stays healthy, it would make sense to play him through 2020 again, because, you know, all indications as of right now is that there's going to be a lockout or some kind of work stoppage for 2021. So do you really want to bring in a rookie quarterback in 2020 and then stunt his development, you know, on the chance that they're not going to have football in 2021. I mean, there's just so many factors to consider. And I just think that if they can, it makes more sense to just ride with Eli as long as you can.
Patty, let's move on to another question. Brendan S. wants to know, can the Giants create a serviceable pass rush in week two if Olivier Vernon is still out? I'm going to take that one first, if you don't mind. And
sure.
I mean, quickly, the pass rush is another one of those things that we've talked about for months as a potential issue. Olivier Vernon is really the only guy who's in the prime of his career at this point who's an established pass rusher. Without Vernon, we saw, you know, Blake Bortles, anytime he wanted to throw the ball down the field, there was very little pressure on him. I think he was sacked once, but there were a lot of times, you know, when he had all the time he wanted to survey the field and do what he wanted to do. It's a huge question for me going forward, whether the Giants can create a pass rush even with Vernon. So, you know, that's a question that they're going to have to address all season long.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, the other thing that I don't think we've seen much of, and I think we might see it more this week against Dallas, is teams haven't really tested the Giants deep. So, you know, the free safety position, you know, they've kind of flown under the radar a little bit, I think, which, you know, is a good thing, but it's not a good thing. So if you're going to rush the passer, you have to make sure that your back end can handle, you know, the responsibility, because, you know, teams are going to go and they're going to quick get rid of the ball. And as we saw in the preseason, the Giants had some coverage issues, you know, in the linebacker core. They had some, you know, so they just have to make sure that they have the back end support if they're going to, you know, start sending 4, 5, 6 guys at the quarterback. Because if you don't have that support, and you don't know what you have in a game situation, you can get burned pretty easily.
Yes, you can, Patty. Let's move on to another question. And Steve and Gina have a question regarding all of the turnover on the Giants since the with the new roster. They want to know, has any team in recent history started the season with a 53-man roster that had as much turnover in a single year as the Giants roster this year? They're wondering, you know, if this amount of turnover, you know, might be unprecedented.
First off, hi to Steve and Gina. They write to us, I think, literally every week. They're great people and appreciate the letters and the compliments and the feedback. So hi, guys. Regarding your question, I don't have exact numbers in front of me, but if I remember correctly, the last time you saw this kind of turnover was when you transitioned from Fossil to Tom Coughlin. And that's really not as uncommon as people think. When a new coach and a new GM, you know, in this case, a new coach and a new GM come in, you tend to get a lot of turnover. When in 2004, you know, Coughlin came in, and, you know, they still had, I think, Ernie Accorsi was still the general manager. So maybe not as much, but there was quite a bit. But again, you put a new GM and a new head coach combination in there, and I don't think it's unprecedented, especially when you're coming off a 3-13 season. I mean, you'd be foolish to keep the same guys that, you know, were potentially part of the problem the year prior. So, no, to answer your question, I'm not surprised by it. I think it was to be expected. At some point, I might take a look and see exactly what the turnover was when Coughlin came in here. But I do remember there being a lot of turnover when they hired him in his first year.
Patty, I think you hit all of the essential points there. I mean, this is what you had to expect, you know, with a, you know, coming off 3-13, you know, with new decision makers. You know, obviously not everybody understood every decision that was made, but, you know, guys who come in, new decision makers, you want to change the culture, you want to change the roster. You're not going to just go out there and fail again with the same players that the previous regime failed with. You're going to try to fix it. And you know, when you try to fix it, that means you bring in new players. It is a lot of turnover. It's a lot of new faces, but that's why a lot of those new faces are, you know, include guys, you know, who are veteran leaders, guys who maybe you don't quite understand talent-wise why they're on the roster, but you need veteran guys who have been in locker rooms who can help, you know, bring that chemistry, you know, who can help with the leadership and help as all of these new faces get used to each other.
Absolutely. And, you know, you don't, you know, you like to think that you can kind of fix stuff with the guys you had, but as we saw last year, just everything that could have gone wrong for that Giants team did, from the culture to the play on the field, to the injuries, to the coaching. It was just the perfect storm. And, you know, Dave Gettleman was hired to come in clean that up and get this team back on track. So anybody who thought that, you know, it was just going to be a tweak here and there, grossly underestimated the job that needed to be done. And you know, it's still too early to say whether or not Gettleman made all the right calls, but certainly it looks like they're headed in the right direction.
Patty, let's take one more quick break. Let's hear from our second sponsor today. Let's hear from MyBookie, and then we'll come back, take a few more questions, and wrap up our show for today. Giants fans, let's talk about advice. Patty and I are always being asked for it. And the truth is, we can tell you a lot of things, but we can't tell you who is going to win or lose the games. If you think you know, you've got to check out MyBookie. MyBookie has been in business for years, has great online reviews, and offers an easy-to-use mobile site. You win, MyBookie pays. It's that simple. MyBookie has in-game live betting, the most rewarding player perks, and for you fantasy football players out there, you can even bet the over-under on how many fantasy points a player will score in each game. Join now, and MyBookie will match your deposit dollar for dollar. Visit MyBookie online today. That's MyBookie. And don't forget to enter the promo code Locked On. That's Locked On to activate this special offer for our listeners. With MyBookie, you play, you win, you get paid. All right, Giants fans, Ed Valentine and Patricia Traina here on the latest edition of Locked On Giants. It's a Twitter Tuesday, and we are rolling through some of your questions today. So, Patty, let's get right back to it. Eric W. wants to know, do we think it will take a couple of games for Eli Manning and Odell Beckham to get their timing back on deep routes, and such as the one that they missed on Sunday in the end zone? I'm going to let you go ahead and take this one first, Patty.
I would say on the surface, yes. But I would also say that, you know, we saw during the summer, Eli and Odell, every chance they got, they would sneak in some extra work, whether it be, you know, during practice when the Giants were working on special teams, whether it be after practice, whether it be before practice. Those guys did a lot of work together in the summer. I think what you have to take into consideration now that the games have started is that Odell is now going against defensive backs whose job is to try to slow him down, whose job is to try to impede his progress in getting open and getting separation. Meanwhile, Eli, of course, is trying to operate behind an offensive line that, you know, as we've discussed earlier, isn't quite where it needs to be yet in terms of pass protection. So I don't know exactly how much of those two factors played into the play that you're asking about. I think it was a deep post to the end zone. But I think that the timing between Eli and Odell is as good as it can be. You know, but you also need some factors. You know, if your quarterback is scrambling for his life because, you know, his offensive line just can't keep the pocket clean, that's going to be a problem, and that's going to affect what you perceive as timing. So it's kind of a, you know, it's not a yes or no answer, but there's other factors involved. But, you know, the short answer is I think Eli and Odell are going to reconnect. I think they're going to score a lot of touchdowns together. And I think, you know, they're going to thrill fans. You know, as long as both stay healthy, I think they're going to be fine as the year goes on. They just need for that offensive line to do a little bit better job in keeping the pocket clean and letting Eli, who has always been a classic pocket passer, you know, yes, we see him moving around more, but, you know, he is at his best when he stands in the pocket and can step up. And they just need to make sure that he gets a clean pocket to do that.
Patty, let me say this about Eli and Odell. They've been, you know, they've been – practicing together for years now. I just don't see, really see timing between the two of them as a major issue at this point. The one thing I did want to address is just a quick thought on the particular play that we're talking about here. You and I were in the press box on Sunday. Anyone watching the TV, you know, watching the game on TV saw this. When you initially look at that play, when you see that play and you see the ball in the air and then you turn and you look at Odell Beckham in the end zone, that play looks like an overthrow. It looks like that ball is off target. Eli Manning asked about that after the game and asked about that, you know, a couple of times, basically said the ball was thrown right where he wanted to throw it. You know, he said that he thought that there was some traffic that Odell got caught up in that just didn't allow Odell to get to the point where Eli thought Odell was going to get to. You know, for me, I'd rather see that ball thrown a little bit long than a little bit short, because that ball's going to be picked off if it's short. You know, but you know, the way that I look at it, you know, it's like a lot of things, Patty. It may not be exactly, you know, what you think you see on television, you know, at a quick glance. There's a lot of factors that go into whether a play succeeds or not. And in my own film study, I haven't quite gotten to that play yet. I want to see if indeed Odell did get caught up in some traffic. But Eli just seemed to think that Odell didn't get to, you know, for whatever reason, didn't get to the point where he thought Odell was going to get to.
Yeah, I remember that Eli saying that. And again, that goes back to what I said before about, you know, now they're working against guys whose job is to, you know, make sure that connection isn't as smooth as can be. So I remember looking at that play. I thought there was a little bit of traffic, but I thought Odell also did a good job of, you know, breaking free and you know, getting separation. But, you know, all it takes is for somebody to impede you at the beginning of your route, and it can mess up the entire timing. But I agree with you also that, you know, you want to make sure that, you know, you're not underthrowing the ball, because as you pointed out, it could have been picked off. So I personally don't have as much of a problem with that play. I think, you know, Eli did what he had to do, and you know, yeah, it looked like it was overthrown, but, you know, at the same time, he did what he had to do to make sure that it wasn't going to, you know, be picked off. And I think if that ball had been picked off, people would have been a lot more upset than it going incomplete.
All right, Patty, let's take another question here. Zachary S. wants to know, and we've talked a lot about the offensive line, so we'll move on from that. But he wants to know, outside of the offensive line, what really scares you the most about the Giants at this point? So, Patty, you first in terms of weaknesses that bother you at this point.
Oh, gosh. What scares me the most? I don't want to give too much away because I am writing something for Big Blue View on this. But there are a few things that I see carrying over from last year that bother me. And I'll give you one right now. I won't give you all of them, but, you know, as a teaser, that's my topic for the Big Blue View article that I'm working on. Third down is a problem still. And, you know, I think what happened, and I don't want to go, again, too detailed right now, because then I'm giving away what I'm going to write, but Jacksonville is a very good third down team. And I had a couple people, when I wrote this as a key to the game, I had a few people say to me, well, duh, yeah, of course you got to keep third down manageable. But when I wrote this for a preview that I did for The Athletic, what I pointed out is that Jacksonville, like any other team, becomes susceptible to third and short. Okay, but you get a team in third and long, now you got basically no chance. And I don't have the exact numbers in front of me, but if I remember correctly, the Giants converted just one third and long pass against Jacksonville, one out of, I want to say five or six. I don't, again, I don't have the numbers in front of me. I'll have that in the article. But that was a concern for me because you need to, you know, sustain drives. If you sustain drives, now you don't have to worry about putting a pass rush out there. You know, you can control the clock, you can control the game, and you can dictate to the opponent. And I just didn't see that last week with the Giants.
Well, Patty, penalties play into that. You know, the fact that the offensive line is still, you know, we've talked about the offensive line quite a bit, and that group just has to get better. You know, we'll see how that goes. For me, I keep coming back to something else we've already talked about when I think about things that scare me. And for me, it's the overarching issue of, you know, where on earth is the pass rush going to come from? Because you just can't, you know, hang your secondary out to dry and expect them to cover guys, no matter how good Janoris Jenkins is and how good Eli Apple is and how good Landon Collins is. You can't expect guys to cover forever. The Giants are going to have to find more pass rush than they found on Sunday, you know, if they're going to succeed. I mean, the Giants didn't give up a ton of points on Sunday, to their credit. Defensively, they held Jacksonville to 13 points. But Jacksonville, as good as they are on defense, is not the most dynamic offense that the Giants are going to face. The Giants are going to face a lot of teams who can do a lot more damage to them in the air than Jacksonville can if they can't get to the passer. And so that, for me, is an issue that scares me. All right, Giants fans. With that said, we will call it a show for today. We will be back with you later in the week as we preview the Dallas Cowboys, and maybe even with a special guest later on in the week. We'll see what we can come up with for you. But thank you for listening, as always, and we will talk to you again soon. Bye-bye now.